बनेगी और मेरी बच्चों से मत मार्ग में मत मत सी से तेरी तेरी बाई बिची भी तो प्रभु से
Okay, so thank you very much for coming for this briefing. Let's start with a briefing on the by the Department of Traditional Affairs on the customary initiation field. Let us invite you and welcome the teacher and the team. They will take us through what are the issues there, what we should be aware of. And then we'll discuss and then about the program that we'll propose for public hearing. And I know that you have been there, Doctor, and they will just discuss the way to go now. I think we've done the work anyway, it may not be necessary for us to go again. Otherwise, we'll be giving us unnecessary work to do when we have done everything under the sun. I think we should do so. Then once we look at it, not to approve it in the meeting, but just to look at it, because we need your advice on some of the issues and not of they are hopeful that we'll have a discussion tomorrow. By the ministry, by the department, on the field of the discussion around this matter. It is very clear that local government is facing a lot of challenges. And I'm not sure what are the nature of these challenges this year. I think you know better than myself. They have been in administration for many years. But it seems a lot of our cities, small and big, are just in crisis, let alone those towns and cities and municipalities that devote that money to the BBS. It seems that money is gone. They may not be going to collapse, they wouldn't have money for administration. And something must be done to address some of these challenges that are facing local authority. I know that members are invited from the 18th to the 15th. Honorable Masondo, for another two other members to attend the SACA organized conference on infrastructure and other alternative way of funding for Katalo. It's a very important area, it's in Houghton. I'm not sure if they're great in Houghton, but it's in Houghton. But we must really have a discussion about that. I think tomorrow we have then sufficient time to have discussion about the state of the Katalo. It seems things are not really shaping up okay. And the problem is in Devon. And then in terms of the Auditor General's office, the temptations of officials, another issue that worries everyone. Collapse of the provisional services. And we know anyway DG that 49 municipalities are serving each in each and areas. So we will never have money to serve, therefore the line had a fund and another fund of the 49 of them, they can't do anything because there's no money that they can receive from anywhere. They don't have their own revenue that services that service in indigenous community. I think the big challenge for all of us and we to start. If the workshop by itself, I would also have some discussion on this issue to see what else we can do. But it seems not, we are not doing well at the local government level, generally speaking. Of course, there will be areas that are performing a little bit better. But I think there was also a report by all the general office on indicating one of the most about it. municipality is interested are completely in disarray. And I'm not sure whether who is included in that or not. But it seems we are really facing a great challenge about the local town. Some of them are taking over the Northwest by the department. Hopefully the department tomorrow also will touch on this issue. We need just a real discussion about the state of local power. Surely when we have heard from our research, you know, there's some real discussion about this. Petrol basin is there as a project, as a program. But the things are not solving the problem at the local level. So, and the national administration is still what they're saying to address some of this problem. We'll be briefly then I think tomorrow we'll be really teaching about some of these issues. Hopefully we are meeting here and shall we tomorrow. There are no committees that are meeting, only four committees that are meeting in Para. There should be space for a record. We have sufficient time. There's a discussion around this. Surely DG will assist us also at the department level. If there's a research that has been conducted about the state of local government, we should have it also. And have a discussion about this issue. Because I think a large number of communities are very worried about the state of local government. Surely all of us are worried about it. One way or another. At the national level, we must really talk seriously about this matter. It's very bad, it's not doing well. Causes a lot of strain in local communities. It causes a lot of protests. The other issue that causes anyway for protest, but basically, services is a bigger issue that people are also going to do. One way or another, we must address this and see what we can do. Otherwise, the initiation is one way, of course. Because Dr. Yon have any, who do you call these people? Some machine and others to go and see whether this thing are happening or not. And then, that's a bigger problem that they are having. But hopefully we'll have a great discussion about this tomorrow and see what else can we do as the National Assembly and then to play our role in terms of the assisting the local authorities, the municipalities, and also make some proposals about what else can be done to address some of them. It's very clear that the one that is interested in the northern. Northern part of our country, where they're going to be really facing serious challenges. Hopefully, DG will be able to persuade Treasury to assist them. I'm not sure how this will go. There's a lot of money. Kukuni and Colin Shabani, the new one, I think their budget is about 200 million rand. 100 million rand is put in the bank. The bank is disappeared. I think the mine one will achieve, and then that municipality is a new one. It's going to collapse. We don't have resources to deal with some of the challenges faced by them. There is a challenge, I think, tomorrow as we meet, and then if we find a way, we must come and do what we can do, all of us, seriously, to start addressing. Then continue the work working on the traditional customer initiative teams. I think you will give you time to take us through and then give you a third time also to explain some of the issues to make it easy for us. What are the issues, what we want to do. It's a big thing, you know, it's going to take us through. But it's not sitting today. And there's sufficient time for a discussion of things. And hopefully, other colleagues are joining us tomorrow and have not yet. But I don't think we'll resume it after the meeting is put in. I think we've got a problem with communication challenges. and that's how this is. But the economy was not coming here to this, but it's far. If your person is in Mangos, can't really fly to come here unless it's a special church. I'm not sure the country will come in Taiwan. We must communicate this every decision that we take at least 2 weeks before. That member must be reminded of it. But if you don't do so, you make it difficult. As my mother was also complaining, I'm not a great report to your doctor. If you remember last week, the baby was not the same. We must try to do that. The problem is that it is not for imitation. It's complicated. It's open to time. Members are busy. They will need to be reminded about this, even if we gave the program last year. We must keep on reminding them and trying for them to make arrangements. And DC, most welcome into your team. And we are recording it now. We are talking about the state of local government just for ourselves. And then we invite you then to take your time and take us through. And assist us to understand exactly how we're going to do this, how we're going to implement it. We have resources to implement it when the National Assembly has approved it. Given the fact that we are very reluctant to have many legislations towards the end of the year. Because otherwise, again, we have every legislation that we must pass, but then take us to next year. We can't take decision also in terms of the problem that binds new members of parliament. They have to decide by themselves what they have to do. Hopefully, we are going to finalize this year. On a good program, maybe this year we have to finalize. Otherwise, the next NPS, MPs, may decide again to reinvent the wheel. They have another discussion with this year. Then we must try whatever best them to set up a program for this season. But then this is all about them to work on. It's a very important thing. I think in December already this bill should be in place and see then how this year going to implement it. Because it is an initiation period, and then also a large number of people sometimes die during this period. And then we should have done some of those challenges. Which you invited to take the platform. You may introduce your team again as a formality. Do it. You know the team anyway. But you can introduce that team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. I've got two of my team members here, the legislation drafters, the Treasurer of Westwood, Dr. Renato Bester. We have been in this for me. I joined them in February this year after most of the work has been done, already. But these are the colleagues from the Department of Traditional Affairs who will assist in this presentation. My former colleague from DPSA, speaking there only, Renisha Naid, which is the Chief Director of Legal Services, Department of Public Service and Administration, but I believe she is here in a different capacity on something else.
No.
On the Commission Bill, I suppose, the Public
Commission Bill. Commission is drafting a bill. There are two bills, the Commission one and the other.
So while the consulting between herself and the secretary, Chairperson, once again thank you for this opportunity. We met with this committee in February, when we were giving an update on legislation in the department broadly. And we indicated at the time that the next step in terms of the customer initiation bill was for us to obtain approval from cabinet that it gets tabled in parliament. So in this presentation we will be providing an update of where we are with the process, but also to talk about the main provisions in the bill, which will then serve as the basis for the next steps. We just indicate in the presentation already on slide 3, which is the introduction, that we are trying to address the concerns that have been raised about the customer practice of initiation. That while it is a legitimate cultural practice, unfortunately there is abuse. There are abductions that happen, there are injuries that happen, and in some instances death as well. So the issue that has been raised here has been, is there a way in which we can intervene from a policy perspective, from a regulation perspective, to make sure that we address the situation? While the legislation exists at national and provincial level, it has been felt that it is inadequate and that more should be done to address this area. So if you look at slide 4, then it just gives the history in terms of where the national policy development process started. Going back to 2012, when there was a draft policy that was submitted to cabinet, further research was done on that draft policy, submitted to cabinet in April 2015, and eventually approved by cabinet in April 2016. At that time, when it was approved, cabinet decided that we should go beyond just having a policy, but have legislation as well. So the customer initiation bill emanates from that process of the initial research that was done by the department. The draft pieces of policy that were tabled before cabinet, and that brings us to where we are today in terms of the bill that is in front of us. At the time when we presented to the committee in February, we were still going to go to cabinet to seek approval from cabinet that it be tabled in parliament, and that indeed happened. That cabinet approved that it be tabled at the end of February this year, that it be approved, and it has since been tabled in parliament as well. That was in April, my record said as well. Perhaps just to indicate on slide 5 that the critical objectives of the bill, we are looking at coming up with acceptable norms and standards. We are looking at making provision for specific structures at national and provincial level so that we make sure that initiation practices take place within a safe environment. We are looking at measures to prevent abuse. We are looking at clarifying roles and responsibilities for all key role players in customary initiation. And we are looking at the issue of effective regulation of initiation school. It's not in regulating the cultural practice itself. That's the matter that we keep emphasizing, that we're not interfering with the cultural practice itself, but with the manner in which schools conduct themselves, schools get established, and the monitoring processes that need to be in place. All these methods are provided for in the bill. With your permission, Chairperson, I'll ask Dr. Rinaldi Bester to talk about the main provision in the bill itself.
Thank you very much. Did you, Dr. Bester?
Good morning again, Chair and Honourable Members, and thank you for this opportunity in this first briefing to the committee of this bill. If we look on slide 6, when we go into the content of the bill, it starts. The bill has 5 chapters, Fortunately, this one is a lot shorter than the position required for leadership role. It's about half the size, so...
Half the size?
Yes.
Traditional,
no. I remember that one.
This one is much bigger than that.
That's what I think is 41 pages in the current version, and that traditional quite leadership one was just over 100.
Yeah, over 100.
Very much. Chairman, chapter 1 of the bill deals with your the standard kind of provisions that you usually have in your first chapter of legislation, your definitions, your application, objectives, the objectives that DG just referred to, prohibitions, and then your guiding principles. I think the important thing to point out there is that this bill will apply to initiation schools, whether it's female or male, and irrespective of therefore gender or age. It applies to will apply to all initiation schools because all of them need to be regulated. Then on the next slide, Honourable Members, Chapter 2 deals with oversight and coordinating structure. Now, at national level, provision is made for a national initiation oversight committee. That will consist of not more than 11 persons. And the membership there will be members from the National House of Traditional Leaders and very important stakeholders like the CIL Rights Commission, our department, police services, health, women, National Prosecuting Authority, and of course the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council. But there's also provision that comes to 9 members. It's 2 from the National House and then 1 each of the others. There's also provision in case it is necessary for a specific purpose for the minister to appoint 2 additional members to this national body, which then takes the total to not more than 11. And those members will only be appointed for a specific period or a specific purpose. So they will not be full-time members of this structure. The functions of the national body will be of an oversight and monitoring nature. That is the most important function they have. They need to provide guidance to commercial structures. They may conduct inspections and investigations. They have to oversee initiation awareness campaigns, something which the department at the National House has been very strong on in the last few years to make sure that people are aware of initiation and more so aware of the rights that are contained in the Bill of Rights. And they may operate an initiation hotline. The other provisions as far as this structure is concerned deals with the general kind of issues like who's the chairperson or who may become a chairperson and deputy chairperson, disqualifications of membership, vacancies, meetings, and then the administrative and financial support to them. Then on slide 9, provision is made then for provincial initiating, coordinating committees. Now there are 3 options. And we have to draft it like this for the purposes of the specific provincial situation. The first option is where you do have a provincial house of traditional leaders, then the membership will consist of specific persons referred to there on slide 9. And we also have to make provision for instances where you do not have a provincial house, but you have ratified traditional leaders. That's basically the Gauteng situation. And then, of course, instances where you do not have a provincial house and you also do not have recognized leaders, but initiation takes place in that province. And that is basically the way to happen. So all provinces are covered and will be able to establish these coordinating committees. In fact, Chair, Honourable Members, I think in previous meetings where committee was briefed on initiation in the past few years, they were informed, committee was informed that some of these structures consist exist informally at the moment. The problem that they have, of course, is they have no powers to enforce in the absence of legislation. Now, on slide 10, the functions of the provincial initiating coordinating committee, most importantly, is they have to consider the applications of the initiation schools. They may develop criteria that initiating schools are complying with, and then they have to register these schools. And they also will have the power to close a school that does not meet the requirements. They may conduct investigations, conduct awareness campaigns. They have to keep a very comprehensive database for all the information prescribed in the bill per initiation school. They may develop certain manuals, They have to report the views of initiates to the police services, and there's an interim measure in clause 41. They talks about the registration of traditional surgeons. Chair, honourable members, these functions that are listed here, you will find in clause 15 of the bill. These are just highlights. Clause 15 has a very, very long detailed list of functions that the committee will be responsible for. Then on slide 11.
Professor. You can't run this without Professor knowing the paper.
I
don't think you were
accommodated.
You're accommodated now. No, you want to government fund to assist you, Professor.
No, yeah, that's okay.
I want to see Professor what is organized. Okay, Doctor, take the platform.
Yeah, on slide 11, to assist these provincial committees, provision is made for them to establish technical support teams if there is a need for them to be assisted. In a province where there's a lot of initiation taking place, for example, in the Eastern Cape, there may be a need for the committee to be supported by a technical support team, but they can only perform functions that are delegated to them by the provincial coordination committees. On slide 12, Chair, we deal with the, in chapter 3, with the responsibilities, the roles and the functions of all the various role players. Now again, what you see here on the slide highlights a few of those responsibilities and functions. The bill itself obviously has a lot more detail around it. But we're looking at what is the responsibility of government, and obviously government's responsibility overall is to make sure that there's proper regulation as far as the customer initiation practice, and but specifically the schools are concerned. As DG mentioned earlier, the bill does not interfere with the custom as such. Also, we're looking at the houses of traditional leaders. They have important roles to develop criteria that must be used for the screening of your principals and your caregivers. Traditional leaders, they remain overall responsible for your initiation practices within the area. And if I can just mention, those provincial initiating coordinating committees that will be established at provincial level, if you look at the membership, you will see that provincial houses have representatives, will have representatives. And in fact, on both the national side, that committee, and the provincial side, the chairpersonship shall come from those particular members who are traditional leaders in the houses. Principals and caregivers, principals, will be responsible for everything concerning this particular initiated school, and caregivers will be responsible for the general care of the particular initiate. On slide 13, something which is missing, I think DG mentioned earlier that although there are existing laws that deal with initiation in provinces, the application thereof is very, very limited. They usually only deal with one specific aspect and not with initiation in general. Something which is missing from those laws is the rights of parents and your legal or customary guardians. And we all know that the rights of children are protected in the Bill of Rights. And so too, parents and guardians have certain rights. So the bill makes provision for them to decide firstly, together with the initiates, whether that person should attend an initiation school or not, to make sure that they obtain a medical certificate declaring that initiate fit to undergo initiation, and that they also will have the right to attend to an initiate before speak during initiation. But obviously there are certain requirements. They can't just walk in and attend to the initiate. If you read the details of the bill, you'll see, for example, that the principal must make a certain area available where sick children can be attended to. And then there's provisions about traditional surgeons and medical practitioners. I won't go into them here, but when we get to clause 28 of the bill, we'll say a little bit more about the traditional surgeons and the medical practitioners. On slide 14, provision is made for the roles of police services as the prosecuting authority. I must say at this stage, we received, during the whole process of the drafting of the bill, probably the most valuable
inputs that we received over the past few years came from the National Prosecuting Authority. They really assist us a lot to make sure that provisions of the bill are fair and reasonable, but also that it can be enforced in an effective manner. Chapter 4 changed most probably the most important part of the bill, which deals with initiating schools. Schools must be registered. They have to comply with certain criteria or prescribed criteria. Now, the criteria will have to be prescribed by the provincial committees that the bill is making provision for. Because remember, initiation differs from province to province, but also it differs from community to community. So we will allow the provincial initiating coordinating committees to draft the criteria relevant to that particular province. Registration of a school will be valid for a specific season, and then in case an initiating school is taking place on land in private ownership, then they have to get the permission of that landowner to conduct initiating school there. This is something that came up in the Free State in the last few years, where farm owners were not consulted before initiation took place on their farms. Something that the Department of Education is very serious about is that initiation seasons may not interfere or overlap with official school terms. Slide 50, Chair and Honourable Members, clause 28 of the bill is the most important clause of this whole bill. It deals with consent, prohibition, age, and circumcision. And now we'll just highlight a few areas covered by the clause. It firstly states very clearly that initiation is a voluntary customary practice, and no one may be forced to undergo initiation. The person may only attend an initiation school if all the necessary consent requirements have been met, and if that person has a medical certificate that says clearly that the person is fit to undergo initiation. The minimum age for any initiate is 16 in terms of the bill. Now, we are aware of the fact that there are provinces where they take initiates at a younger age. But this bill is aligned to the provisions of the Children's Act. We cannot go in contravention of the Children's Act. And I can also say that there were even instances where people commented and say the minimum age of 16 should be higher. So you have different views. We know there are provinces where people are younger, but there's also provinces where they say it should be higher than 16. But in line with the Children's Act, we use the age of 16. But to accommodate provincial specifics, we allow provinces to determine a higher minimum age, but they cannot go below 16. In the case of people between 16 and 18, that initiate, as well as the parents or the guardian, must give permission. And then in the case of people who are 18 and older, then that initiate has to give permission at least. As we state there in paragraph F on slide 15, we confirm all the provisions of the Children's Act relating to, for example, genital mutilation, which by the way, in terms of the Children's Act, is totally prohibited. Virginity testing, which is prohibited for female children under 16 and above 16 is allowed under certain circumstances. And then the Children's Act has very specific provisions about male circumcision also. And we are confirming all those provisions. In fact, Chair, in this bill, there is a number of references to clauses of other pieces of legislation that exist. And we have made extracts from those pieces of legislation. And with your permission, we will add it out to honourable members. So once you get into the final details of the bill, the clause by clause discussion specifically, you will need to see what those clauses are saying. We can see what we have to share in. On slide 16, Chair, if you go on public hearings, you ask for take on this comment, this is probably one of the courses that you will get the most comments on.
Which one?
On slide 16 on top, paragraph G. Most circumcision. Now, let me tell you what this law says. It says, in cases where most circumcision is part of initiation, it can only be done by a registered medical practitioner or a registered traditional surgeon. However,
If it's a conditional surgeon, then that person must also be a resident medical practitioner, and if the person is not, then that circumcision can only be done under supervision of a medical practitioner. Now, this is a long history. Just to brief members very short, briefly. In 2030, there was a very big initiation in Durban that was held, hosted by the minister at the time, Mr. Baloyi. And it was, I think there was about 500 people more or less in attendance, including many, many traditional leaders and also many, a few kings and many other ministries were represented. And that was one of the decisions taken at the Zimbabwe, to say that we need to address this issue of what circumcision, for example, and all the infection that happened after that, and the negative aspects around it. And they took this decision. Then, Chair, a person who forges any consent in terms of Clause 28 will be guilty of an offence, and no consent may be given for a person to attend a non-registered initiation school. Just on that, we know that people often refer to illegal initiation schools. But the fact is that you can only have something, can only be illegal if it had to be legal in terms of a specific piece of legislation. So in some provinces, for example in the Limpopo, where the particular law deals with the registration of initiated schools, you can talk about an illegal school. But in other provinces where you do not have this provision, there can't be an illegal school. You can't have an illegal school because illegal in terms of what? And that is one of the gaps. There is no national law that deals with initiation in general. So we refer in the bill to non-registered, registered and non-registered schools. Once this bill becomes law and there is a non-registered school or somebody operates without the, and outside the scope of the bill, then we can talk about an illegal school. No initiator may be assaulted or abused under the guise of discipline. It's something that's been reported to us by the National House in recent years, that people are assaulted in some instances. The principals of schools will have to make sure that all the water and sanitation needs are catered for initiates, the basic human rights in the constitution. No liquor may be provided to initiates under the age of 18. I'm aware that some commentators were saying there's no liquor being provided to any way in initiated schools. But at the same time, we also received reports that there are instances where it does happen. And people may not necessarily be aware of the provisions of the Liquor Act. And in fact, the offence clauses of the Liquor Act is quite frightening. I think if you supply liquor to a person under the age of 18, the, in terms of the offence clauses, if you found guilty, you can get a fine of up to R1 million. The death of any initiate must immediately be reported to SAP and be investigated. Slide 17, Chapter 5 deals with general issues, allowances, offences, appeals, regulations and monitoring. The offences clause is clause 33 of the bill, and it's a very, very comprehensive and detailed clause, making provision for all possible kinds of offences that there can be in terms of this bill once it is enacted. Just on allowances, we need to point out that, I'll point it out under financial indicators, we'll get to the committee. Then on slide 18, provincial peculiarities. The bill allows for provinces to determine a higher minimum age. I mentioned this earlier, but they cannot go below the age, but they may determine a higher minimum age for initiate and certain role players. We also make provision for instances where provinces already have legislation that provides for this provincial initiation coordination committees. The Eastern Cape is the perfect example. They have a relatively new piece of legislation, Initiation Act. It's a 2016 Act that I think came into operation in January or February 2017. That Act of theirs is based, largely, on the national policy that was approved by Cabinet. And they therefore make provision in that Act for a provincial initiating coordinating commission. So we acknowledge that in this bill, so that once this bill becomes law, there's no gap in the provincial situation that they have to align first with this piece of legislation. They can continue to use their commitment. However,
you will see when you go into the clauses in detail, there are certain national norms and standards that will prevail if any provincial act is in contravention of it. We also make provision for provinces to establish local initiation structures. This is basically to accommodate the Free State. In terms of their law, they make use of what they refer to as local initiation structures. This is not local government. It's an initiation structure that they establish at local level to assist the province. And then we make provision for your provincial initiating committee to delegate responsibility to municipalities. This is the instance or the case in Gauteng. Gauteng depends largely on the metropolitan municipalities to assist them with the implementation of initiation legislation and regulations. In Gauteng, what you will find in the metros, they have bylaws dealing with certain aspects of initiation. But I must point out that nothing can be delegated to a municipality unless the municipality has agreed prior to their delegation. Jefferson, on slides 19 and 18, 19 and 20, we refer very briefly to consultation. Now, I'm not going to go into detail there, but I think, if honourable members, when you look at the memorandum of the objects of the bill, you will note that the policy and the bill was consulted extensively on. And it's extremely important to take note of the consultations on the policy also. And that's why we included it in the objects memorandum, because remember, when Cabinet approved the policy and they said, draft the legislation based on the principles of the policy. So obviously then that consultations on the policy also ultimately impacted on what is in the bill. And you will note that when eventually then we went to the stage where Cabinet said you can publish the bill in the Government Gazette for Public Comments on slide 20, we only received 8 comments, which is almost nothing compared to what you usually receive when legislation is published in the Gazette. And we believe it is because of the very long and extremely extensive consultative processes that took place up to that stage when it was published in the Gazette. I don't think people had any more comments, because comments were accommodated last week, and so there was only 8 comments that were received. Chair, financial implications. I know this is what the committee will scrutinize very carefully on slide 21. Now, if you look at the membership of the structure, the National Initiating Coordinating Committee and then the provincial one, the members will be public office bearers, your members of the provincial houses and national house, they are public office bearers, government officials, and then here and there, people from the CRL Rights Commission, in other words, Chapter 9 institutions, who already receive salaries. So there will be no additional financial implications as far as their membership is concerned. They're not going to receive additional salaries or anything like that. It's only those 2 members that I mentioned, the international body, which may or may not be appointed. If they are appointed, it's for a specific need. And they will get allowances to be determined by the minister after consultation with the Minister of Finance, but provided, of course, those people are not government officials or public office bearers. What the national department and the provincial departments will have to provide for is the travel and accommodation expenditure of members. If they have to go out to do inspections and they have to stay over or they do investigations, and of course the awareness campaign that the provincial and national governments will run. As I mentioned earlier, this structure in many provinces exists informally already. So provinces are covering that. And in our case, national level, the National House of Judicial Leaders are performing oversight functions at the moment, and the comes from their budget. Chair, slide 22. The bill was proposed as a Section 76 bill because it deals with cultural matters as well as traditional leadership to some extent, both of which are listed in Schedule 4 as concurrent legislative competencies. And I see in the ATC I saw it was in fact then confirmed as a Section 76. This bill is needed, Chair, to protect, but also to regulate the customary practice of initiation and to make sure this is done in a uniform manner across the country. Thank you very much, Chair.
Let us invite members who want to comment on the presentation by the department. Open up, Mr.
Thank you very much.
And I'm saying that in the bill there is provision that the power that be, say the principal and all those who are conducting initiation, we have to inform the FATF in case an initiate dies immediately. And because one of the reasons for coming up with a bill of this nature is to avoid that. Because especially in the Eastern Cape province, there's been a lot of initiates that have died there. And it's really again initiation, usually they do initiation during this period. And because I think an initiate will not just die immediately. I mean, there will be a time when he shows signs of weakness, and then you report accordingly. When he shows signs of weakness. Now, when you say when he dies must be reported, dying at this is an advanced stage. For me, it's a blessing. For instance, here is an initiate who shows signs of being attacked by flu. A small thing like that, because that says to me, this person is not well enough. Show signs of being attacked by flu is not well enough to undertake the rigor or the rigors of initiation. So, I mean, I want clarity around that area. Whether doctors are there immediately to attend to them. Because our cry has been that the Department of Health must be brought to the fore. Like it happened in KwaZulu-Natal, you have the Department of Health taking a very active role in this matter. And we have never had of instances where initiates die. Dying in hospitals, dying in decent places. So that's my take, Chairperson, just that area alone. Otherwise, I see the bill is very detailed in terms of alignment with the other structures, like the province, municipalities, etc. I think it does talk to the problem that we've been facing as a country, because it embraces everybody, because this thing must be done uniformly, according to law.
No. Dr. Dockett. I think this is a very important presentation. It's just a thing that Dr. DeVille is for all South Africans to initiate. Because in some part of the country, they go for initiation sometimes between 12 and 16. And it simply means that as we engage with them, those who are doing it 12. And then it's the cut-off date here is 16. 16 is the minimum. It's very clear that you need to engage with those who of course anyway, doctor. Those who do circumcision at birth, surely it can't be included here. Because birth is almost zero. And because I'm sharing that this the bill is of general application for all South Africans, irregardless where they think in terms of their religion, their culture and other things. Because that's very important for us, that the bill is not drafted for certain communities. It's a general application for everyone within the boundary called South Africa. Therefore, there are a lot of things that we have to engage with other people who argue strong. 12 years is better for whatever reason. And then also the confusion of initiation and circumcision. And then sometimes that confusion causes a lot of harm when people confuse the two. Make as if it's one and the same thing, when in fact it's not one and the same thing. Circumcision can be done at birth, but initiation is at 60. Because unless we are very clear ourselves what we want to do with it, we may end up with criminal elements that can reject this tradition, using some gaps. So it was this money-making now. People are making money from this building. The hijacking of children, possibly taking them to initiation, the transition schools. It will be difficult to forcefully initiate a person. I don't think it's correct, unless you're in colleges. Generally, it's not a forceful thing, because initiation is another stage of taking a person from one stage to another stage. Therefore, it's about the general advice, giving wisdom to those young people who are moving to manhood, who are going to manhood, or womanhood, who are going to woman. Because I think if we separate the two, then we'll be clearer what we are talking about in this area. So it's a very complex area, because people with traditions sometimes, they argue the tradition don't change. I think we must try to do so. I agree, General, it is the duty of the state to protect life. You can't have a state that doesn't protect life and property. Generally, it can't be a state. Anyway, they initiate it first because of those two basic issues of now. They get involved in many other activities. I think we should work it out in the manner that I said. But it seems the public hearing is a little bit broader. Then we are going to discuss with members also how we do public hearing and communicate that. Doctor, yes,
sir. I just want to make a clarity on the necessity to be specific in the bill in terms of women representation. Why we were saying specific? That should be at least three women. What causes that, or what informs that? Just want to understand that.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and honorable members for the question. Let me start with the Chair. You referred to public hearings, and your committee will decide where you're going to go and how you're going to deal. What we have done, I sent the Secretary Shireen a list that will assist you. The National House provided the information to me per province. There's a list that tells you per province in which areas which districts initiation takes place. It also tells you whether it's winter or summer initiation, and the frequency, whether it's every 6 months, every year, or every 4 years. So, Shireen, you love to see that. So she can give it to the honorable members, and then you can have a look at that. That should hopefully guide you. On the consultation that Honorable Makhubu raised, if you look at page, when you find, you can look at page 37 to 40 of the bill, that's in the objects memorandum. And we just touched in the presentation on the consultation, but there you will see the extensive consultation that has been taking place since the policy development up till the bill. What I was saying is that the very last stage of public consultation was publication of the bill in the Gazette. And we only received 8 comments then. And we believe it's because of the very extensive consultation that took place prior to the final publication in the Gazette. Like, I think people just saw, you know, all their comments have been, or the majority of their comments were accommodated one way or the other. The issue about the principles and the caregiver, clause 21 of the bill deals with the responsibilities. And when one reads the bill, clause 21, but also together with a few other clauses, you will see that there is a duty on your caregiver specifically, but also on the principles and on your traditional surgeon or traditional health practitioners that are involved to identify, not wait for the last moment, but once it initiates clause 6, to immediately arrange for medical attention for that person. But in the unfortunate circumstances that initiate dies because of initiation practices, then it must be reported to SAPS to have it investigated. It was reported to us over the years that there are instances in certain provinces where initiates have died, but it was kept secret until the whole initiation process has been completed after 4, 5, or 6 weeks. And we try to avoid situations like that. Chair, the issue of the age of 16, and more specifically as far as it relates to circumcision. What the Children's Act is saying, Exception 12 of the Children's Act, is that you have those. It's in those extracts that we handed out to Honourable Members. What the Children's Act is saying is that circumcision for the purposes of religious reasons, and health reasons, can take place at any time. But for other purposes, for example, cultural purposes, it has these strict provisions where the age of 16 comes in, and a lot of requirements as far as consent that you must obtain that involve health. Initiation, custom initiation, is a cultural practice. There may be instances where religious teachings or religion forms part of the practice, but the circumcision, the way it was explained to us over the years, done for customary initiation, is for cultural reasons and not necessarily for religious reasons. So the challenge that we also, when we drafted this book, was really grappling with is the provisions of the Children's Act. And as I say, we are bound by those provisions. But if the committee, remember the bill is in the hands of the committee, and the committee may propose amendments to the bill, but perhaps if the committee feels that it's necessary, the committee should also look at, together with the relevant portfolio committee, at the provisions of the Children's Act. For now, we are bound to 16 because we cannot be in contravention of that particular piece of legislation. The issue about not forcing people to attend initiation, the bill talks about the possibility of people being abducted or kidnapped, which is also cases that have been reported in the past few years, that people on their way somewhere else, they are just picked up along the road, and then the next thing you hear is the family is informed that your child is attending an initiation school, and then the family must pay for the child attending that school. Female representation on the structure. Some of our stakeholders, such as the Department of Women, but also the Gender Equality Commission, said we must make it very sure that, remember, this is the oversight structure, that we must make sure that there is a minimum number of females represented on the structure, because there are also female initiation schools. Maybe not as many as male initiation schools, but the fact is there are. they do take place, maybe it's just kept a little bit more secret than others. But last year, for example, there were ones that were reported to us taking place on farms in the Free State area, or was it 2016? I think it's 2016. So it's important that for your oversight process, that you need female representation. And we followed the same approach as we had in the traditional question leadership role and other legislation to make sure that females are represented on those structures. But if you read the final details of the book, when you get to the stages where people get to do inspections, investigation, etc., it can only be a person who has been subjected to certain practices itself. So for example, your medical practitioners, your traditional health practitioners, those people, it can be male or female, depending on what kind of school it is, but it must be people, even the caregiver and the principal, who have undergone initiation themselves. Thanks.
Thank you. I just want to add, with regard to the point about initiatives that I think, also the bill makes provision for the instance if one of the initiatives that enters the school is already sick, the medical practitioner or the supervisor or the conduct the initiation may refuse to do initiation for the child to be initiated. And then further, very importantly, is that if the child does fall sick, the parent and the guardian must also be contacted immediately and the child may be removed from the school.
I think it's a useful addition in terms of the comment by the Honourable Commissioner that they also apply aspect in the presentation, in which there must be a medical a checkup even before you go, so that if the person by the time they go to the mission are not well already, that the sick case will indicate that the person is not fit. But indeed, it's not just about when the person goes in, but also what happens when the person is there already, in the case they fall sick when they are there. But I just want to add, Chairperson, the point that you made about the focus of the bill. Members might know that when the decision was made by Parliament that it should be, by Cabinet, that it should be tabled in Parliament, there were other comments that were made in the public space. And again, it's the point, the Chairperson, that you're making, that the moment people talk about here about customary initiation bill, the immediate reaction is government is trying to control the practice. And that's where the reaction comes in, because the debate in the public space was there. People were saying, I'm sure that members of parliament qualify to engage in this discussion, because if they have not gone through the practice themselves, should they even be allowed? And that was the language that has been used. But I think it's because of the point that you are making, that there is that assumption that government is trying to interfere with the practice, the cultural practice, which is not what the bill is about. And I think if we can get that distinction here, I think then we'll be able to have a much more meaningful discussion, even in terms of public consultation, around what it is that the bill is trying to do, as opposed to regulating the practice itself.
Thank you very much. You're very helpful, Professor Mas. He said that he was a somewhat but a good thing though is that doctor, I think you have perverted wide. I don't think there will be a report when members of parliament go there and then consult almost the same people. And of course people can share their views. But the list that we provided there is very long, including that consultation was very thorough. Maybe we're not going to have a lot of other problems, because it seems there's an acceptance that we can't have initiation and the competition that happens outside the laws of the country. That you should protect the children of the poor, because anyway, people who die in this circumcision in particular are children of the poor. Very rare children of Kubis are dying there, because Kubis are not a poor person. But they're poor, generally speaking. Their children are dying there. then we can't have people who are supposed to protect everyone, allowing a situation to happen under the guise of expedition and cattle. There's no cattle that things it could end. And then I think it's important for us to stick to that. I think the House of Traditional Leaders, I think they're very progressive on that area of work. I think they're well covered on that. We may not have a very difficult engagement with them. But the problem that will be following a land question. The land question goes back and we hold. And then if they make some mistake on the land question, they may take their anger to initiation. And then linking with land, all these things become the problem. Sometimes community don't differentiate. If you come there from government, even if you say I'm not about land issues, yeah, they'll still raise the question of land. If they're not converted in a certain form in time. And then I think I'm fine, but I think we can work with that to them and see what else we can do. Unless Professor is going to comment.
Yeah,
but I'm worried about the Oh, okay. that is a very nice one. We'll do four of them. They are starting on the 26th. So we are starting as we come back in Oka. And then we're just following them. Wherever they go, we follow them every day or 4 days after that. And then depending how we manage that one, we'll have an impact to this one. And therefore, despite the fact that the doctor or the department has worked very hard in consultation, the traditional leaders now are very clear on this. It seems there's no resistance anywhere in the country. So even those who are doing the 12th now, I think they will agree to take it to 16. It doesn't cause material benefit generally. But they may resist a little bit, but I think they will be persuaded to want to agree with that. Because there's a law that is existing already. There should be a threat law that is overcome at the same time. And then, of course, where females also are initiated in some part of the country, I think they are covered by the people. Everyone is covered. And then there's no assault. Because I think that has been a cause of death and in many cases where initiated were assaulted so badly by a drunk person. And then that is a bigger problem that is happening. And also very good that even traditional surgeons also will be qualified generals in terms of the traditional system of qualified. But one takes out a young boy from nowhere to do harm to other boys and cause a lot of harm to the mutilation. I think that is interesting. And then I think we'll deal with it, doctors. See, I think we'll be part of us. When question is difficult, we'll just say, this is a man. We started the whole thing. We're very, very peaceful before this man came in with this being. Now it's causing harm for us with initiation and other things. For this day. But I think every South African is covered, really. It's a very good one. Doesn't take away the religious issues or the health issues that people do at birth and other areas. 3 months old, it seems covering everyone. Therefore, it's not discriminating against any person. Doesn't discriminate against women and men. And I think the system will work. The composition also, I think, is fine in terms of the structure that I proposed. So here, we engage with communities. What are the issues that they think should be covered? And I think very helpful at Duda. Yeah, fine. Really appreciate it. Okay. Doctor? Teacher? Yeah, fine. Okay. Okay, colleagues. In general, we do have our problem that we are in here now. See how we can do it. Of course, Dr. Arabia has given Sharon some of the areas that we visited. And that's to ensure that we visit some of them. It may not be necessary to have a very detailed thing, because I think we've done a good job. If people die every day, of course, we move on faster. and then pass the bill. It would be a good idea that we pass the bill before the end of the term. That we don't have a situation that then who comes in 2019, they start again a new process. And then if you can be able to do it before the end of our term, would be great. Because this is a serious issue for poor people in particular who become victims of those who kidnap their children and then take them forcefully to these initiation schools. They must be protected, I think, with our Jewish teachers. And then I think we should work it out for each certain problem as well. And then we can then work it out in the process. Okay, we'll share with you our problem. And then as we come back from our long position superior, we'll then have a discussion with you and see what has been done then. And of course, we'll have also the board and so that this is important. And then, since on the chance of the basic principles and the objects of the bill, I think we are set to change about the system. Then we can work it out and see what else we can do. Okay, colleagues. I think it was very useful for us as this person. At least we are giving us hope now that we won't have people going to stages and hijacking the microphone. And they wanted to speak, and I get to the coin said. I hope that we're not also to experience the organized, that is the specials who comes in there sometimes. Rural development agencies at the time who came in there. I think this one generally is well focused, it's straightforward, and we know better what shall we do. Okay, now thank you very much for that. Shall we do it tomorrow? Where do you attend?
Thank you.